Remember back in high school when all the kids divided up into little groups and it was like, come on, join the rich kids group, or like, you're an outsider, we don't like you. Well, apparently, we never grew up. Because now all we have are really big, really scary cliques, and these go by modern day names as trade blocs, such as NAFTA and the EU. Now all you have is like the rich kids clique, you know, and like the poor kids and the wannabe rich kids, and this is a horrible, horrible thing to divide us. Now, this house will regret the trade blocks. We believe the trade blocks are a bad idea in general, and I will show through 5 separate reasons why trade blocks need to be eliminated. The first reason is that the free marketplace economy is hampered. There needs to be things such as competition so that you can breed the superior product, and that you can take out the weaker ones, and you can make the best possible product for the market. The second end of that is there must be a place for weaker economies to develop and emerge so that they can grow as a nation. Without this free marketplace economy, and without this sharing of ideas, there's a stagnation and no progress will occur. And also under this is there's a sense of us and then others that emerges from such groups and blocks, and this creates tension and hostility between the two groups that does not easily go away. An example of this would be the EU versus NAFTA, or a historical example would be the Soviets versus NATO. And as we can see, such tension and hostility rarely ends in success, as the Soviet Union, now they have to spend an hour to regret. I'll take your point of information.
Sir, do you understand the difference between a military alliance and a trade bloc?
Yes, I completely understand the difference. However, I was referring to the NATO nations, not NATO in particular, as a trading bloc. Thank you. But that'll move on to my second point, and that is that there is economic and environmental oppression that occurs within trade blocks. They exploit workers. For example, companies that are American-based will hire workers through NAFTA in Mexico and pay them much less wages than they would pay any comparable employee in the United States, because there is absolutely no regulation and no rules governing how much they should be paid. The environmental example is, again, there are no regulations and rules. In Mexico, it is much looser on its ecology and environmental rules, so that the companies there can basically get and dump anything they want to. That'll take your second point.
Thank you, sir. Now, from our perspective, I'm sure we can agree that it does look like when Mexican workers get paid less than American workers work. Wouldn't you agree from the Mexican workers' perspective, it's great when they're getting paid twice as much as they otherwise would?
The American companies can still pay them a comparable wage, and I know that a smaller amount in there is proportionally large, but they're still not paying them nearly enough that they should be paying them because there's no regulations or restrictions in the trade law. I'll take your third point of information.
Is the distinguished speaker aware that while we do not have a trade bloc with any Southeastern nation, still American companies engage in the same practices you blame on NAFTA?
I am here to discuss trade blocs, organized oppression of the workers. I'm sorry that Nike hires people in other sectors, but we have no control over that. What I'm talking about is an organized and institutionalized form of oppression. That will move on to my third point, and that is this, that trade blocs deny help to emerging nations or to emerging countries. Nations that want in will have severe restrictions placed on them so that they will fit in with the rest of the group. This is oftentimes detrimental to that nation. And also, if that doesn't happen, then the nations can't meet the standards to get in. An example, this is the former Soviet bloc countries trying to get into the European Union. They're not allowed in because their economies aren't quite up to par with the rest of the EU. You got to develop to get in, and you can't develop unless you get in. It's horrible. It's the fact that the country can't break into. I'll take your fourth point of information.
I just wanted to know what motivation the countries have to try to get into a trade bloc.
They have the motivation of less tariffs. That's the fourth point. Tariffs are prohibited to the development of countries that are trying to get in. It charges them a lot more money to sell the same products. Yes.
Sir, if, as you say, it's had to be in a trade bloc, why are we worried that it's difficult?
Because the problem with trade blocs is they're so exclusive that they arm the countries that aren't in them. That in order to be anytime, any way prosperous, they have to be in this trade bloc. Now, my fourth point of contention is that powerful nations in the bloc abuse the weaker nations within that construct. An example of this is the countries need, countries need the money that the trade bloc is going to bring them, so they have no resistance to the countries coming in and taking over. Now the leader nation who controls that has control over the policy of the weaker and lesser nation. An example of this would be in NAFTA, the United States has control basically over the policies of Mexico because they have to say, we're going to keep you out of a trading bloc and you're going to be in such a bad advantage, so they won't do it. Now these nations have just gained even more perceptive power because they do have to control over the other nations. So it's a formidable detriment to the nations inside of it that are weaker because they're now being controlled and puppeted by the other one, yes?
Doesn't Mexico benefit from that?
That they would benefit just as much, and other nations would also benefit with their no trading bloc. My fifth point of contention is that it homogenizes culture. Now, this is also an important argument because cultural diversity offers many different things. For example, it offers different viewpoints and perspectives on problem solving. And if the whole culture was homogenized, there would not be another perspective from which to look, and it helps society grow. Different cultures can see a problem from a different angle and get an alternative idea or different perspective, and it damages creativity when this is taken away. So in summation, trading blocks, while yes, they are beneficial to the nations to some degree, they are vulnerable when compared to the global economy that needs resources for the primary production. The marketplace is hampered. The environment and the economy of the workers is exploited and oppressed. The emerging countries are denied access to this said prosperity. The powerful nations abuse the weaker nations, and there's homogenization of culture that occurs. This is why trading blocks should be eliminated. Thank you.
Floor now back to Magnus and Ethel Schweitzer to speak for the first opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seth, for welcoming me to the podium. Also, I'd like to thank the members of Parliament for joining us here tonight. I would also like to thank our panelists here that we have on the opposition, the four members, and also the members from the opposition. I'm very thankful to be here especially today. Now, in discussing the limits that are placed on nations who decide to become part of trade blocs and how hard it is to get to the trade bloc, a very important thing to ask yourself is, why would nations even be motivated to join a trade bloc? Now, there were some things that the Prime Minister agreed to, that there are certain benefits that can be accrued by being part of a trade bloc. Now, I would like to have all of you to think about these. Most of you in here are college students or have been former college students. Why do you, after finally being free of the public education system when you graduate as a senior, put yourself voluntarily through education schools all over again? I mean, why would someone do something like that since they've finally been free from the public education system and so many of us just take classes and take
well,
the reason why is because there are some other benefits that you're going to get. Economic benefits. You make sort of sacrifices, which is the same kind of sacrifices that are made by nations that go into trade blocks in order to get the benefits that are and so I was going to first question, which was from Mr. Andy here.
Do you feel that then NATO is some sort of school in order to educate these poor little nations that can't figure it out on their own?
Well, in a sense, I guess you could say that it is. And I would like to give you specific points to back up my claims here. Now, first and foremost, I want to comment on the Prime Minister's, he said that he had five. I ended up writing down 8 points, actually. First and foremost, about talking about how free market is hampered in a trade war. But that's not true, ladies and gentlemen. If you turn this argument around and see that when countries are not engaged in a trade bloc where they have more trade with each other because tariffs do not exist, you would actually have lower growth if the countries did not have the special privilege of no tariffs. For instance, when the United States had a more isolationist perspective on its economic relations with other foreign countries, which was during the period of World War I, in between the period of World War I and World War II, certain things happened to our economy. First, we had low growth. Secondly, we actually had a depression. So that gives you an empirical example about how the free market is not hampered for countries that are part of the trade bloc. And sure, come on, I'll have your second question, sir.
You said low tariffs encourage growth, but aren't these tariffs in fact imposed by these trade organizations? These trade
organizations. Not have tariffs in certain countries that are in the trade bloc with me.
Sure.
Second one, Prime Minister's second point, that we need a place for a weaker economy. And without this place, there's going to be stagnation. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, notice that this is just a claim for it without any analysis to back it up, where I don't understand it. But secondly, I want to show you how I'm giving you another example about how countries which are more isolationist actually have less competition with people in that they are not trading with foreign countries, so they do not have foreign products that are entering their market, and likewise, their products are not going out into other markets. So distinction between the types of products. Therefore, a country with a more isolationist perspective is less motivated to make good products, and that would lead to stagnation instead. So not being motivated, having a more isolationist viewpoint is what leads to stagnation, not the trade blocks themselves. Actually, I think one of the reasons for you. Andy?
But wouldn't you agree, isn't it true that these companies are isolated by the trade blocks which don't allow them in?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to finish up. But before I do, I want to talk about the Mexican oppression argument that was also put forth by the Prime Minister. Now, Mr. Herman here had a very good point that in Mexico, there are people that are getting paid much more now that they are part of NAFTA than before NAFTA actually occurred. And that is something that cannot be refuted. So actually, Mexicans are being better off now than if they weren't part of NAFTA. Likewise, Mexico is an example of an up-and-coming nation. Before it got involved in NAFTA, it didn't have nearly as many importations of television sets, computers, or automobiles. So now they're having more people that can be working towards manufacturing those products because they're acquiring the products, and now they're acquiring more of a market for those products. That's why people are getting paid more there. So once again, you can see that the Prime Minister is contending to this point. Now about talking about those nations which are outside of trade blocks and whether or not they are being isolated. First of all, the Prime Minister admitted that for these countries to be prosperous, he admitted this, that for the countries to be prosperous, they must enter the trade block. Now, this is where my college education, my little school analogy applies. You go to school and you enter these colleges because you want to be prosperous later on. You make certain sacrifices right now, and that might include, in the analogy here with the country, they make certain sacrifices right now, they accept certain restrictions that are placed on them, even though it might be hard for them right now, because they're seeing an end goal later on. It's the whole point of the trade block. And so, once again, when the Prime Minister admits later on, when he says that these other nations submit to the control of maybe more powerful nations and submit to certain restrictions, they do this because they recognize that later on down the road, they will have more economic prosperity. And also finally, sorry, you're out of order, sir. Finally, about the argument that we put forth that countries are homogenized in trade blocks, instead, you're going to see, once again, that the exact opposite occurs from a more isolationist perspective. The thing about trade blocks is it actually embraces an idea of diversity and that we should be opening our markets to other foreign countries. Instead, if we were to turn around and not think that way, we would be opening the door for prejudice and racism and all kinds of things like that. So far, the Prime Minister's claims have been shown to be turned around. He's actually confusing the idea. We certainly would not regret trade blocks, ladies and gentlemen, and that is why we beg to oppose.
Thank you for your recognition, Mr. Speaker. What I want to present to you, folks, and thank you for everybody for being here. You're all feeling like you're going to see you, but you should come back to your heads. It's just correct. What we have here are two philosophies. They're trying to slide. Well, first we say, okay, trade block is just like a trade block is just like a click. And I think the Prime Minister here made a beautiful analogy when he said it's just like being a country where we get all the clicks to keep other people out. And they tried to say, oh, no. Really what our clicks are about is bringing people in. Aren't we wonderful? Not true, folks. The fact of the matter is the purpose of a trade block isn't to improve the nations and member nations and make the world a better place, but rather, the point of a trade block is to make one's trade better by excluding other nations, by saying, we can't compete because we're so much bigger than you. With that, I'll take your point, sir. So those in the trade block, trade block, do in fact visit. But we're not here to talk about whether or not those in the trade block do it. Good thing, whether or not we're hurting people, like look at the bread lines that resulted in Russia, and hang on just a moment, sir. Look at the bread lines that resulted in this type of from this type of competition. These people are starving in Russia. These people can't eat in the former Soviet Union because of the very source competition. With that, I'll take a question to you.
Oh, sir, do you recognize the fact that tariffs between the members of trade blocs are much lower and therefore is not isolationist stance when you lower those tariffs?
Yes. They say this over and over again. And I just want to point out that if we say the United States, that, oh, we really want to make everybody grow. And the way we're going to do that is have lower tariffs. What they say is, we're going to have lower tariffs with everybody. We'll have low tariffs across the board, but they don't do that. They say, oh no, we'll create an organization where we have tariffs that you try and compete with this organization. We're not trying to help them out. We're trying to build ourselves up. And this is why they're bad. What we want to talk about here is the global economy.
Yeah.
They hurts the global economy. And then I'd like to move real quick to the point that, the leader of the opposition has made, which said that the almost school would try to teach the dirty little Mexicans how to compete.
Oh, shit,
the Mexicans don't have anything to offer. Are you kidding us? The Mexicans don't have anything to teach. Are we thinking about ourselves? I'm just time for what do we think about ourselves that we can educate these people? Of course not. We can lower our cash. We can aid Mexico and still gain from in its global economy. But just and look down at that last point. This homogenizes culture. I should give you a 1 second analysis on it. But really what we're doing is saying, Mexico, you have nothing to offer. And to just please be like us and maybe you can be successful. Mexico does have to be awesome. We have nothing to offer. With that, I'll take your point.
Of course Mexico has nothing to offer. That's what you're attacking.
Yes, of course. And according to the government, what they have to offer is I'd like to point out also these major uncontested points, we all seem to have it flowed a little different, but the tariffs are prohibitive to trade. They harm those that are outside of the block. She didn't say, oh, no, they help those who are outside of the block. She just said, well, some of them are nice if you're in the block. Yeah. And what we're saying is that's a click. And she didn't even address, and this is our whole point, that those powerful nations within a trade block abuse the trade block. They say they use this as a means to make themselves more powerful. We don't need to take over Mexico and Canada. We'll just make a trade block with it. And then we can just operate as if they were part of our nation. We can deal with other nations. And then when somebody like Somalia comes along and says, oh, we'd like to compete, we say, you know, it's good luck.
Yeah.
If Somalia versus EU, it's just not going to work. So what you need to look at is
is the speaker aware of the difference between NATO and NAFTA?
It's all sharp as end. what we need to do, the difference that I'm aware of, is that in a global economy,
what is the difference?
In a global economy, you can have two things. You can have a system of isolating individuals and just beating them down, and this isn't helpful, because you wind up with people like Chechnya and Bosnia and all these countries that it just can't possibly compete, the South African countries, where they can't possibly compete. Or you can have an inclusive global economy, which allows everybody to compete on a fair playing field. Sure, lower these tariffs and such, but lower them for everybody. Don't compete unfairly. Don't join a trade bloc. For those reasons, I thank you.
I would certainly like to thank the speaker for adjudicating today's round. I would like to thank everyone in the audience for coming to walk with us this debate. I would also like to thank Mr. Smith for being a viciously competent timekeeper. I would like to thank every member of the government who is certainly putting forth a very debatable proposition. I would also like to thank my elegant and eloquent colleague with the opposition. In fact, tonight I'm going to move on to the debate. For specific issues that I would like to express to you today. The first of those issues is this simple idea. What is isolationism? And we need to look at it. It is a good idea because, unfortunately, the government has a very skewed image. They believe that lowering tariffs is an isolationist tax. I don't understand this. If we are to sit here and basically say we're not going to engage in trade blocks, that basically says we're not going to lower any tariffs at all. However, if we do engage in a trade block, we do lower some tariffs, and by definition, that is a net lowering of those tariffs. What we need to understand in this particular instance is, sure, we're not going to use all isolationist tactics. We still may not trade with some countries, but we certainly are more likely to be trading with other countries, having more of an exchange of not only goods, of the culture. Yes, sir.
Lots of things, excluding the rest of the world, who is struggling.
Oh, I invite you all. Now, it's very interesting that we use the word NAFTA, because North America, sir, North America. What we realize is that geography naturally has a large part to play in this. Of course, the economy is going to have trouble competing. They're across an ocean, sir. What about the transportation costs, sir? Did you not take that into account? What we need to understand here is that certainly other countries that have a geographic difference, if you would wait one moment, sir, other countries that do have a geographic difference certainly would be at a disadvantage. If we could simply have an enormous no tariff zone, we would have a different problem on the governance. Yes, sir, your next point.
We also include this among countries like Peru and Bolivia and Ecuador and Brazil and all the other people who are at the bottom of this wonderful
country. Well, sir, many of those other countries, because there has been much talk of the NAFTA community, supported by the United States and other members of NAFTA, to engage Peru and other certain countries in joining NAFTA. This is understanding that we are going to expand it. Sir, now at this time, I do need to move on to my speech. Thank you, all three of you may sit down. I'm afraid you may not understand that my opinion has not changed in the few moments that have passed. What we need to move on in this debate is to understand that indeed there is an advantage to joining trade blocs. That is going to be my second point. There is certainly a definite advantage of joining trade blocs that apparently the government team is absolutely overlooking. Now, what we need to understand here is that they call you. No, sir, you can sit down. I will call on you if you're going to be so rude as to come back. Sir, what we need to understand in this particular instance is that they have admitted countries want to block the trade block. And yet they tell us trade blocks want to block the bad thing. So why precisely, if trade blocks are so bad for those countries, do they so viciously want to join them? It's a contradiction within the case, within the proposition that has been brought forward. There is a direct contradiction. Countries want to join, but it's bad for countries. That simply doesn't make sense. What is being admitted in that particular instance is that there is indeed a definite benefit from joining those trade blocks. That is to be overlooked, and what we also need to understand is that those trade blocks build that international trade, that global trade that can build that is apparently so advantageous on the government side. What we need to understand here. Yes, sir. I will take your point.
Did you attend the lecture with me on circular reasoning? Because that sounds like a good thing.
Moving on. We need to go on to the question of a culture becoming more homogenous. Now, it's been proposed to you today that there is some sort of vicious attempt on the part of the United States to treat, and I quote from the government, those dirty little Mexicans in any particular manner. Now, first of all, I find the language extraordinarily offensive, and I know that the opposition has not been so correct as she refers to them as dirty little Mexicans. Now, further note, perhaps that reveals a certain inherent bias within the back of the mind of the government team. But we need to move on to realize that, yes, we do why precisely you're out of order, sir, the time has passed on down 1 minute. If we did not like the Mexicans, why would we actively engage with them in trade?
Dance like a puppet.
Thank you, sir. Moving on from that very bizarre I would like to move on to the point that if we did not like the Mexicans, why precisely are we engaging in trade with them that has been proven to be advantageous to them? They are promoting economy, an economy that is raising the standard of living. I would draw to a point that if there was no economic engagement at all, there obviously would be no jobs at all. Perhaps they are not being paid a fair wage, but we must understand that in the instance, perhaps a less than fair wage is better than no wage at all. Distinguished members of Parliament, I must ask that you absolutely oppose this proposition on the basis that the team is not only culturally biased, they do not understand the topic of isolation, so nor the advantages and benefits provided by trade blocs. That's all the point,
Saddam isolationism. Rationalized
I want to tell you a story, because stories are related to this kind of thing. You may have noticed if I stand by the mechanism when we pick this up, I'm not a thin guy, okay? I was one of those fat kids who was not a member of the, I thought it was a clique, but apparently it's something different, the clique, but it's formed out. I was the person who was left in the corner of the playground whilst the pretty beautiful people played over on the other side with their skipping ropes and all that kind of stuff. I don't know why I want to play the skipping ropes, but anyway. I was that fat kid. And then I lost a little bit of weight, you can see. I was a little bit of weight. I could join that group, and I was so happy because there was a new fat kid. And I could point to the new fat kid and say, "Nah, fatty!" I was one of the thin people. I was benefiting from the fact that I was slim and beautiful and a member of the group. That, no thank you, that is the most important idea in this particular debate today. I'm going to talk about promotion, global economy, stakeholder theory, and a bit about what Mr. Rosenberg thinks. It's quite amusing. So the first issue, which ties into the thing that I've been saying, is very much to do with the motion. If you will notice, any of you who have attended any kind of lectures at all over the past week, let alone the one on circular reasoning, will notice that the motion is in the future tense. This House will regret the trade block. And Mr. Thorne was very careful about this. He said, "We will come to regret the trade block." He gave you lots of clear examples of how trade blocks are bad for people. He did not say people do not want to join them. I wanted to be in the clique of thin kids. And I lost a bit of weight, and I was. But there were new fat kids around the place. And we stood around and pointed at them. Okay? That does not mean that our way of doing things was a good way, was a morally correct way, or was in any way beneficial to the entire team of the rest of the playground. That's what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. That leads me into my second point, the issue of the global economy, the global playground. We saw only very recently how in a matter of days, the collapse of the Asian economies rippled around the world. It had effects here in the United States, it had effects in the country that I come from, the United Kingdom, it had effects all over the world. We saw, if any of you have seen or heard George Soros talk about this, we saw them have a knock-on effect of the Brazilian currency crisis, which was precipitated by the Asian economic crisis, in turn have effects all over the world. The economy of the world today is completely interlinked in ways we cannot even begin to understand. Yet this House, the side who purport to understand isolationism, are the House that says, "No, hang on a minute, we're all going to stand over on this side of the playground, and you can do whatever you like, because we don't care about you. We don't care about you, whether you're Mexican, Somalian, whether you come from the Czech Republic, no matter where you come from, we don't care about you because I'm all white Jack." Speaking of which, Jim. Big quick.
Yes, sir. You believe that trade blocks are something to be mentioned at all?
If you're going to be one of the nice thin people, I'm sure they're absolutely wonderful. But if you're a fat kid who's stuck on the outside, then absolutely not. They are a problem. Our problem here today, ladies and gentlemen, is the fact that the world is a global economy. I have demonstrated that to you, and that is why these kind of things are abhorrent. Nations are moving together, and we on this side of the House, the side of the proposition, have advocated entirely this notion, this kind of Adam Smith notion of the free hand, the invisible hand of the economy, and the benefits that those can bring. Mr. Thorne talked about them. He talked about competition bringing the best product. He talked about the fact that it must be a place for weaker economies. He talked about the fact that it breeds this us and them mentality. He talked about the economic and environmental oppression that occurs. And this really, economic and environmental oppression, leads me on to my third point, which is that of stakeholder theory. Stakeholder theory is very popular in the United Kingdom, where the Prime Minister, Mr. Blair, is a big advocate of stakeholder theory. Those of you who attended the lectures, again, will know Steve Woods talked about this the other day. He was talking about how the people in the Mississippi Delta do not get to vote about whether or not all their sewage is pumped into the Mississippi. The people in New Orleans, who are the direct recipients, quite literally, of the sewage from the other people up the river, do not get a vote.
And the issue there becomes one that there is an absence of any kind of democratic mandate, and this is the kind of extension that I want to add. There is an absence of any kind of democratic mandate within these kind of trade blocs, because you see poor countries who have no way of influencing things that are going on in big, massive economies like the United States. I'm afraid you're out of time, Mr. Chairman, which definitely is all. So that is really the issue that I want to bring up there in the stakeholder theory. Finally, I really do want to clarify the point that I said I would, that Mr. Rosenberg brought out, about this idea that countries want to belong to trade blocs, yet they're bad. How can this be? Ooh, isn't this a contradiction? Well, no, ladies and gentlemen, it's not, for precisely the reason that I outlined from the very beginning. Because countries want to belong to these trade blocs because they get benefits from them. What they're not doing is thinking about their neighbour. And that's what we're advocating. We live in a global economy. We care what our neighbours think. We care how our neighbours are acting. It's in our interest, in a very altruistic sense, it's in our interest to care how our neighbours are being influenced. For all these reasons, I've talked about the importance of the future tense of the motion, the global economic impact, stakeholder theory, and Mr. Rosenberg's apparent contradiction. For all these reasons, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me enormous pleasure to reject this side and propose the motion that this House will repeal the trade blocs.
As well as the Sergeant-at-Arms, as well as our wonderful government, that has set forth a beautiful case for us this afternoon, which we will quickly tear down as soon as we can.
Sure.
The position for giving some excellent arguments. The first thing I would like to address is this whole idea of regretting the trade block. Now, whenever we see the idea of regret, it means that someone is not glad they're in a situation or regret a situation that they set in itself. The government has granted that those in the trade block do not regret the trade block. That's the very first condition I'd like to realize. So working from that, the only ground that we are given is those who are outside of trade blocks to regret them. That is the ground we're working with. Realize, number one, that whether a trade block exists or not, there are still terrorists in the world today. So whether or not this trade block existed, small economies would still have to pay tariffs whether or not they were in the trade block. So it doesn't matter whether they are in the trade block or not. If the trade block did not exist, they would still have to pay the same tariffs they're paying today.
Well, now you have to get Mr. Marsh,
do you, by small amounts of ground that you've been given, do you need the 150 so countries who are not in trade block?
Right. Okay, next, I'd like to go on to the whole idea of stakeholder theory, in which Mr. Whitmore so eloquently gave it. And the idea that those who are in control of bigger countries will control smaller countries. And I'd like to refer you to one of the major trade blocs in the world today, the EU. Realize that stakeholder theory is, in fact, very much intact there. And that's what's the term here? These countries are small and they're together, and they share natural resources. And the fact that they share natural resources makes them want to work together to make a better place for each other. So that within the trade bloc that they work within, they're going to try to help the other smaller countries because they share natural resources. Now, put your question, please.
Absolutely. They all help each other, but they all dump their sewage in Czechoslovakia and in Slovenia and in Yugoslavia and all the other countries who they don't care about because they're not members of the trade bloc.
Sure, why do they care about them? There's absolutely no reason to believe, and you've given us no reason, which I don't care about. We believe in Mexico. Realize that they have given you no reason to reject even the idea of the smaller wages and workers. Still realize that Mexicans are getting an advantage because they are getting paid double what they normally would be paid. Whether or not they are getting paid lower income from Americans is totally irrelevant because of the fact that it's better for Mexicans within the trade bloc. It's better for them, it's more beneficial for them because they can pay double. Next.
Yes. Would you provide a little bit of analysis to say that if trade blocks hadn't existed, this would have still happened? Mexico would never have gotten any factories and all of that sort of thing.
No. Now, realize that... Their idea, what we want to realize, is a zero-sum game. Now, notice that economies are not in a zero-sum game, as they would have to believe. When one economy increases, it does not mean that another economy will decrease. That is not what's going to happen. Whenever you have, not at this time, please, I have a lot to get through in a short amount of time.
Reaganomics?
Exactly. Whenever we see whenever we see one country prospering like the United States, it does not mean that another country will not prosper. That is not logical. That's what it is not at this time, please. That is not, that's what the government would have you believe. That's not the case. The zero-sum game is not a situation here. And one country can succeed, so can another country. That's why you're going to vote for the opposition. They have given you no reason that any country will regret anything. Because no matter what, if there was trade blocks or not, if trade blocks were simply a figment of someone's imagination, tariffs would still exist in any form, no matter what. That's the simple fact. We're still going to have tariffs. So it doesn't matter whether our country is in or out of a trade block, we're still going to have tariffs. That means that they can't regret not being in. And yes, the other point
I know it's much easier for you to defend the tariffs, but we're actually talking about trade blocks, which are a very different thing. Would you address that point?
Sure. Right. Tariffs are something within a trade block. Right? Exactly. There's something that are the trade block, and it's an advantage for those inside the trade block.
Here.
Right, but there's no disadvantage for those if the trade block didn't exist. That's simple to see. There's no disadvantage for those not in it if it didn't exist. That's extremely interesting. Members of the parliament.
I would agree.
Members of the parliament. Here is the reason that the opposition is won today. The whole idea of regret, which this entire debate is based on. Who regrets what? And the simple fact is that if a trade block didn't exist, you can't regret that you're not in it. So what they're proposing can't work. You can't regret being in something that didn't exist if you were to believe what they say. So what we're saying is those inside a trade block are advantaged. Yes, they are advantaged, absolutely. Those outside of a trade block are not disadvantaged. Thus, they do not regret not being in the trade block. They do not regret the trade block existing because they're not disadvantaged. That is why you're going to vote for the opposition today, and I thank you very much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Speaker, the lovely opposition and the lovely proposition. My lovely partner, colleague, Mr. Whitmore, got up here and he described to me about what occurred. About what occurred with the bit bullies, or with the clique in high school. And he said that he had to go through and he had to lose that weight to get in there. He had to pay that price to get in there. And he went through and he described everything that he, the barriers that were there to get in there, because they were the big group and they weren't going to let anybody else in, because they were who they were and they wanted to keep it that way. They wanted to keep it up there and they didn't care about anybody else. They wanted to keep it right there, which is what we're looking at today. We'll look at the issue of the trade block and why we're going to address that. Now, basically, just to go back over the proposition's case, I think it's very important because that alone should win us the round. Now, we look at what the first thing that the Prime Minister brought up. He talked about the free market. Yes, sir.
What were the disadvantages of Mark not being in the place?
But yeah, social options, I mean, you see that occurring with the trade block. But getting back to that first point, because that will be addressed later on.
Oh, that's clear.
Okay. When we talk about the free marketplace being hampered, what you look at here is the fact that the trade market, or the trade block, they hamper the state, what he described before, they hamper the free marketplace idea. Moving on to the second point. And the second point is the environmental and economic oppression. And basically that ties up into what Mr. Whitmore said very well when he discussed the global economy. Now, what you're looking at here is the idea of the Asian economy and the rippling through that had occurred. These economies do affect our economy, and if we don't start to pay attention to them and realize the harm that the trade blocks are putting onto them, basically it's going to affect us. And we're going to put the click for, in other words, it's going to be damaged. It's going to end up hurting us because we're blocking these other countries out. Now, moving on to the third point that was brought up by the opposition, was the fact that trade blocks deny emerging nations. Now, this is very important in today's round, because in order to keep the global economy where it is, we need to support the emerging nations so that we don't see the same rippling effect happen again sometime in the future. Because we're looking at something now that we're going to regret. And if we allow these trade blocks to continue, we're going to regret it later on because we're going to see another rippling occur through the economy. Yeah. We're going to see how these trade blocks continue to hurt us.
Madam Speaker, how in any way have you or Mr. Marks here demonstrated that the Asian economic crisis would not have to support our trade blocks?
Yeah, that's not the point of the example. What we're saying is that we can't trade blocks deny emerging nations to reach to get out there, to get into these. And by not denying those emerging nations, we're taking the chance of just going through again. We're allowing that rippling economy effect to continue to go. The next thing that we brought up was the fact that powerful nations abuse smaller nations. Now this again is important because it ties into everything else. These trade blocks perpetuate this domination theory. This is the way that it's done. This is how we're going to look at it. They continue to perpetuate what is occurring there, which goes very well with the stakeholder theory that Mr. Whitmore had brought up. And it discusses the fact that we're up here, we're not allowing for that. And it also ties very well to the culture and the diversity of cultures that we need to look at. And the fact that... Yes, ma'am.
Well, just on that point there where you're saying that larger nations and the example that Whitmore gave with the EU dumping its all of its garbage into the Czech Republic and stuff, wouldn't that still happen if a powerful nation in Europe decided to dump their garbage into the Czech Republic? How is it different?
You're looking at the trade blocks, and you're looking at the fact that these nations are in these trade blocks, and they're not allowing the smaller, the emerging nations. They continue to abuse these smaller nations. They continue to deny the emerging nations. And when they continue to do that, they're basically dumping. You see that dump, which ties back into the global economy thing. If this continues to happen, we're going to see another rippling that we're going to end up regretting. You're looking at all those factors. To discuss the fact of tariffs. Well, tariffs are within the they're not dealing directly with the trade block. We're looking at the trade block that is occurring. We're looking at the trade block and what's happening within the trade block. And how tariffs are basically about irrelevant because if we're dealing with the trade block and what's occurring with those. So basically, what we look at today is the fact that the trade block allows for this circular thing to continue to perpetuate, that we're going to regret, continue to regret. One, through the fact that they place a hamper on the free market and the exchanging of ideas. They don't allow the weaker countries to grow and prosper because they don't allow for that the trade to keep blocked off. They don't allow for things to go through. Again, you see that the economy and the environmental oppression that occurs, but Mr. Whitmore even ties back into the example of what we're doing, what we're dumping on the smaller nations. That when we get to the third one, the fact that we're denying the emerging nations to continue to go. And then when you look at the fourth point, the powerful nations abuse smaller nations. It continues to feed. And this all feeds into the aspect of the global economy and how that's going to end up regretting it. Because when we see that wrestling go through again, and then when we look at the stakeholder theory and what's occurring with that, we can see how all the rubbish is going to be dumped. So I can see no other vote for the proposition because we don't allow the clicks to immerse and everybody to do.
I would, of course, like to thank the speaker for his recognition for the final speech of the time. Members of Parliament, thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank the members of the proposition, all four of them, for a fine round, and my fellow members of the opposition. Members of Parliament, the motion before us as it stands is this House will regret the trade block. And we on the opposition have been telling you we're not going to regret the trade block. The trade block has been a good decision. We're going to pat ourselves on the back for this decision as time moves forward. And there are three key reasons why that you're going to side with the members of the opposition on the side of this motion. The first of those issues, members of Parliament, is that there are clear advantages for those within trade blocks. And this is clearly expressly agreed on by all members of Parliament. And the process we're having to do, though, is just like that France and Germany and Britain get together so they can point at Romania and say, funny Eastern Europeans. But that's not the case, members of Parliament. It's not just a clip whereby we're making fun of other countries, members of Parliament. You look at the economies of scale, and you see that we get productive advantage, just a second. You see, with the economies of scale, we get a productive advantage within trading blocks. That means for members within trading blocks and for members outside of trading blocks, we get more good and better goods than what we're buying at a cheaper price. Clearly, that's an advantage for all. With that in mind, members of Parliament, keep in mind that there are advantages for those within the trade block. So keep in mind, so if we're going to weigh the disadvantages for those outside of trade blocks, we have to weigh these against the clear advantages for those within trade blocks. The United States economy now represents the richest economy in the history of the world. And NAFTA has been given a significant part of the time to fill this massive problem. The economies of scale simply work too often. So these advantages are important, and that's a very important reason why you should vote for the opposition.
Okay. So it's a very important reason that these big taxes who are in the trade that we've identified continue to oppress the whole cycle and destroy the economic
sir. It's an important reason why they join trade blocs, which don't oppress these other countries, which is my second reason to oppose members of Parliament. That these were supposed to harm to those that fed the trade blocs are an illusion. It's a bunch of smoke and mirrors presented to Now again, the proposition tells you that it's a click of tariffs. But again, it's not like we're making fun of Romania. It's not like we're imposing tariffs on these foreign countries. Keep in mind my colleagues pointed out the tariffs exist.
Now this is mine, please.
If you need to stretch your legs, feel free, but I'm not going to answer your question. If you'd like to stand there. Members of Parliament, keep in mind that you can certainly use it. Clearly, the idea of trade blocks is that we're removing tariffs within our trading block. So it's in France's best interest to not have tariffs with Britain and vice versa. At the same time, keep in mind that because the European Union establishes this trade block, they don't impose tariffs on goods bought from other countries. So not this time. So if they want to buy goods from Eastern Europe, or they want to buy goods from the United States, or they want to buy goods from Romania, our goods are just as competitive there. It's just that, well, perhaps a bit less, but just a bit less competitive because they've got more productivity within that trading block. But it's not an example of oppression of these other countries. It's not an example of speaking out these other countries and raising tariffs on them and making it harder for them to compete from them. As soon as they can offer a comparative good at a comparative price, it's just up to them to raise their own productivity. that's what economies have to do, is raise their own productivity. Now, members of Parliament, tariffs are far older than trading blocks. Tariffs would exist without trading blocks, and Romania, if they want to trade with Germany, is going to get tariffs with or without the European Union. They will. That's a matter of fact. And the tariffs aren't going to be any higher than anything else, members of Parliament. If anything else, the European Union and all these other trade blocks are steps towards a universal lowering of tariffs where every can. So clearly, if we need to lower tariffs, if we need the economy to scale to work worldwide, make steps in those directions, make the trade blocks, make them bigger again, maybe someday the World Trade Organization will be as powerful as the European Union, except cover every country in the globe. But wouldn't that be glorious?
So what you're saying is the good thing about trade blocks is that eventually they'll lead to a global trade block and the dissolution of all these individual little trade blocks?
Well, that would be one potential advantage of trade blocks. It would be regional trade blocks. These regional trade blocks are steps in that direction. They're steps in not the size. But I'm glad to see like are still listening here. With that in mind, there's a problem that the third reason we propose. The trade blocks are the best way to deal with the problems for all. Now, these are the kind of problems that economists tend to consider externalities, but I think it's a false pedal to give them because they're more important than they're not external to economic calculations of the problem. I agree with stakeholder theory. I agree with Mr. Blair, and I agree with Mr. Whitmore. It's an important way to consider things. And trade blocks are a good way to take into account stakeholder theory. In fact, if you buy stakeholder theory, you should say we should make decisions on a larger scale. But the United States, for example, they share
should share the Rio Grande River. They should make economic decisions together because they need to make a prime number. Share the same watershed. And that is a step in that direction. And that is a specific example, where we have specific site agreements discussing environmental arrangements and discussing labor rights arrangements so that we can have a better recognition of these so-called externalities that shouldn't be external to our economic considerations. Better deal with these problems by promoting trade blocks, which allow people to make regional decisions rather than more selfish national decisions. With that in mind, Mr. Powell, for all these reasons, because trade blocks not only benefit those within the trade block, but benefit those without by providing them with better goods at a cheaper price, and because they better deal with externalities,
thank all of the participants in this evening's debate, and simply want to announce for everyone that there will be another public debate sponsored by the World Debate Institute. That debate will be held this Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The issue in the debate will be the issue of prayer in school, focusing on the recent legislation passed by the House of Representatives to allow states to present the Ten Commandments in classrooms as instruction and anti-school violence initiatives. And so that issue will be debated here. We hope to welcome all of you back in our internet viewing audience, as well as the members of the House. Thank you very much for your participation in this evening's debate as well.